Welcome to Hello Universe, a podcast about spirituality in our everyday lives. We're your co-hosts, Kylie and Eva. Hey, it's Eva.
It's Kylie.
Welcome back to another week of Hello Universe.
Yay! this episode was so much fun to record.
Yeah, Siva is a gem. She's hilarious and super smart, super energetic. It was great.
Yeah. Before we tell you more about all the reasons you're gonna love this episode, Eva, what's going on in your corner of the world?
What is going on in the corner of my world? I don't know. It's December. This is still very, very strange to me. We are coming up to the end of the line of 2020. I don't know. How do you feel about the end of the year, Kylie?
Oh my gosh. I don't know.
Part of me feels like it's supposed to feel exciting because it's like, oh, yeah. Thank God 2020 is over. But I don't know. But also I'm like, what if nothing changes?
Yeah. Yeah. I am actually have started to feel like an antsiness about this year being over, but as if somehow something magical and different is going to happen on January 1st. And I think that's like, I think that's a complete illusion.
Yeah. What if we all wake up on January 1st and we're all like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, like, oh, wait, it's like exactly the same. Yeah, so this isn't done yet, but I'm building this like 2020, 2021, like review, like, you know, settle in, look at what happened, set your goals for 2021, specifically around business, because I love doing those kind of like retrospective journals. So I'm building one, and I was talking to my friend and I was like being hard on myself, like I want it done already and like I want to get it out to people. And she was like because I was like, because that year between Christmas and New Year's is like the best year to like do this kind of work. And she's like, Kylie, that year, that like week is like the same as every other fucking day of our lives right now. So it kind of doesn't matter this year. Like, just get it done when it gets done. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. True.
Yeah. That being said, I'm taking this online course right now with Aaron Rose. Do you know him at all? Have you heard of him?
Wait, isn't he going to be a podcast guest?
Well, I asked him to be a podcast guest. I didn't hear back. He's a very big deal.
So we got rejected. Okay. I know the name from you, but no, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm taking this online course called Holy Liberation, and it is blowing my mind.
Ooh.
Yeah. So like the whole, like I've literally only listened to the first hour of like the first, like it's a live course, but I'm having to listen to the recordings. The first recording I went to go listen to was 3 hours long. Like I was like, oh my, what did I sign myself up for? Mm-hmm. But this guy is like such a, he talks about God a lot in a way that is like kind of uncomfortable for those of us who come from like, you know, religious backgrounds. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the whole first hour was about like deprogramming us from like our, like the way in which religion has made us believe that we're separate from God. And like his whole thing is around freedom and like what it actually means. And it's just like, it's already blowing my mind. So I can't wait to share more things. Oh,
I love that. I love it when you get into like a really great course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He sounds like he's speaking my language.
Yes. Yes. So hopefully he'll be future podcast guest.
One day. Yeah. We'll get him.
Yeah. How about you? Anything?
I mean, I'm running this course. I'm having the time of my life. For any of you guys, if you're actually in the course, by the way, I just want you to know about my undying love for you guys, for this little community that we have. I'm just having like so much fun. And if you're not in the course, you missed out.
Truth spoken.
Yeah, I mean, and there will be next time. So that's how I'm feeling. I'm like, missed out, but there will be more opportunities. Don't know when, because I'm just kind of, I really feel like more and more I'm just kind of working on a whim, depending on like when I have the energy for it and what feels good. But yeah, that's really just taking up most of my time, and I'm having a really great time doing it.
Yeah.
What about you, Kylie? Is there anything business-wise you want to share with our lovely podcast listeners?
So I think I mentioned last time, but I turned all of my, I created this Learn to Read the Akashic Records self-study course, and I love it so much. And it's been really cool hearing from people who are already taking it, but I just took everything I know about learning to read the records and dumped it into this course that's like broken down into like small bite-sized pieces and include some exercises so that you can kind of like revisit some things over and over again. So they feel really like, you know, solid for you. And I don't know, I learning to read the records obviously has changed my life more than anything except for my kids being born. So I'm pretty passionate about it. And I just want it to be accessible to people if they feel drawn to it. So if you would like some support on learning how to read the records, you can go to KylieCaldwell.com and buy the course. And throughout the end of 2020, it's only $97. So if you are curious, yeah, it's a good moment to swoop in.
Such a good deal.
Yeah.
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 Do you think that price is going to go up after
2020? No, that's definitely a 2020 promotion special because I want it to be accessible and also So
get on
there now.
Yeah, that's what she's saying. Great. Yeah. Awesome.
How about you?
So I have a couple of spaces open until the end of the year. I think for a large majority of this year, I was basically at capacity. Yeah. And then I had a bunch of clients off board recently. So I have a couple more spots for 2020 and my prices are going up in 2021, which is an act of self-love, something that I'm like really excited about because I know that it's time. But I want to make it accessible for anyone who's been wanting to work with me, who's been interested, like, and wants to jump in on these prices. It would be a really good time to do it. So if you are a woman who spends a lot of time honestly struggling because you overthink and you're in your head a lot and you have a lot of fear-based thinking and you know that this is the thing that's getting in the way of you just enjoying your life and experiencing true liberation, I can help.
Yeah,
I can help.
And if you're the kind of woman who like thinks you're in your head too much but also has never not been in her head after the age of 7, and so like you kind of forget like, because I think there's sometimes there could be this thing where you're like, I'm in my head too much, but like isn't this just what life is? And so if that is you, go work with Eva. You won't regret it.
Yeah. I mean, I do have a little tip for how you notice when you're in your head is anytime that you notice tension, like tension, physical or mental. I don't even just mean like raised shoulders. I mean, mental tension is a time that is a sign that we're kind of in our head. And I think that's helpful to notice because I don't think a lot of us notice how often like we are in our heads. Yeah. And there's a way beyond that, guys. I promise you as a recovering anxious overthinker.
Yeah.
Was spending so much time.
Yeah. That's both our story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And like just all the hustle, which was just making that worse. I want life to feel easeful. And we can do that through the practicality of mindset work. And also I think the lovingness of spiritual growth work and like being more spiritually embodied people. Yeah. That's what I want for all of us. So you can find me. The best way to find me, I guess, would be Instagram at Bad Bitch Living. And then also you can sign up for a free 45-minute consultation where we can figure out if we're a good fit for each other.
Awesome. All right. Yay. So after you all do that, you've paused this episode to go sign up for Eva's 45-minute session. And now you're back. And I'm so excited to tell you about today's guest. So Sipa Swan, I just was like so much fun. We were just like cracking up because she's just hilarious. But we cover, oh my gosh, everything from like depression to politics to motherhood and stepmotherhood and new relationships and like, I don't know, what am I leaving out? A million things in between.
Well, all of it, obviously, with the spiritual undertone that we do on this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just silly and fun. And
yeah. And I really appreciate like Sipa's vulnerability because I think she, it's a story that I think I'll speak for me that I know well. It's like this constant feeling like something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
And then coming back to a place of love for the self, I think has been a big part of her journey and why it makes her so fit to help other women with this process too.
Yeah. So Sipa calls herself an impossibility coach. She's a certified coach. She's a professional energy healer who specializes in helping people overcome mind drama. So enjoy this episode.
Yeah.
Sipa, we are so excited to have you. Welcome to Hello Universe.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. So, okay, we jump right into the deep end on this show. So what is spirituality to you and how does it show up in your everyday life?
Okay. I'm really excited about this because I have a very long and vague answer.
Perfect.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
So, I love to think about it etymologically. Like I love, thinking about God or universe, but then I also love thinking about just spirit, spirituality. So when you think of it that way and the relationship to the word inspiration, I was thinking about it, you know, preparing for our talk tonight and just thinking about inspiration and expiration. You know, it's like the breath that is in between, like the act of breathing from when you take a breath and you start taking a breath and that act of breathing and then breathe it all the way out. And the, like all of the existence that happens between when you take your very first breath as a human to the very last breath that you exhale, like all of the act of breathing in between, that spirit that inhabits that like, just, I don't know what I'm breathing. It's this like void thing. And there's so much stuff in it and we don't really know what it's made of or what it's about, but we're interacting with it and we're doing with it and it's filling us up and we're affecting it. And just this like amorphous thing that we put meaning into. So yeah. I think of it in terms of breath a lot. I used to be an opera singer. And so I think that is just one of the biggest parts of it for me is that interaction with this unknown substance flowing in and out of us. And it's not like, it's not a static state ever. You know, you don't reach a place of truth. It's like, you're always truthing a little bit differently every day.
So I love this answer so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry.
I especially love this idea of like this interaction with an unknown substance flowing in and out of us is what you said. And because like, yes, obviously you're talking about the breath, but also that's just like a perfect summation to like all the things, right? Everything is flowing in and out of us. And we're just reacting to it. That's a really powerful quote.
Thanks. Yeah. It's like we're this ever evolving, coagulation of just like dense energy. And then the energy is always changing. And like, what are we even made of?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, what I got from it was this idea of like, it's both everything and also just one thing at the same time that just encapsulates all of just our life. And then all the years of life that you were sort of talking about. And I was like, wow, what a really unique and beautiful perspective.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. I'm happy you guys asked me that question because it was such a fun question to think about. And just
try to give you a warning because it's a little loaded to like give us your life philosophy without any warning. Were you a spiritual person growing up? Like what is the point in which you kind of felt yourself tap into?
I would say, I mean, yes, for sure. And also I grew up thinking of myself as an atheist, like as a small child. I remember thinking like, I don't know what these people are talking about. I think they're full of shit. And I think that was sort of this, you know, that like youthful arrogance that you can have when you see that people are saying one thing and living another, you know, and you're like, okay, so clearly the whole God thing is nonsense because I saw so many people, you know, I was raised, I actually haven't had any religion in my family on either side for like four generations.
Oh, wow.
So I went to multiple churches as a child, just really interested in exploring. And I didn't, none of them resonated with me in terms of their structure. And I was always raised with like a philosophical culture in my home. Like we had all these different books. And I remember finding a Bible in the house and just being like, oh, that's interesting. And I started reading and I think I was like seven. And it turned out it didn't even belong to us. It belonged to a friend of my dad's. And my mom was like, oh, that actually has to go back to them. So she took it and I was like a third of the way through or something.
Wow, you were reading the Bible for fun.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like, I was a really big bookworm. I was really, really big bookworm. And then
but also that's impressive because it's not like, you know, the most readable or plot driven.
I will be honest with you. I skipped the part where they're all about like the baguettes. They're like this person, that person. Yeah. Like,
third of it right there, I think.
I'm not going to say that I was like a biblical scholar as a child, but I was like, what is this thing about? And my dad would talk with me about it. I actually remember him asking me one time, he would ask me these questions where like, I think he wanted this like big, impressive answer. And I'm like, I'm seven. So that's probably not what you're going to get. But I remember him asking me, he was like, oh, so this parable about Jesus saying, he like told me the parable about Jesus finding, people stoning a prostitute. And he was like, let he who has not sinned cast the first stone. And I hadn't had much like any exposure to Jesus. Cause I was like, I think he's like perfect or something. I think, yeah. He said, well, what do you think he means by that? And I said, he wants to start first. Like, I know
that's what it sounds like to me.
Right? Perfect. Spoiler alert. That's not the point of the story. as it turns out. But yeah, so like there were always a lot of exploration and curiosity was encouraged in the like philosophical arena. And so I got exposure to, you know, a handful of different religious structures through friends. And just, I felt that wanting to be part of something larger, that desire for connection, but none of the ways that had been given to me felt resonant. So I thought of myself as an atheist for a really long time. And then I thought of myself as an agnostic. And it's just been this really developing thing for a long time. I got trained as a psychic a handful of years ago. That was a really big transition into like claiming my spirituality, claiming connection. And more recently, about a year ago, I started going to a Unity church in Portland. And pardon me. And the Unity Church is pretty progressive in terms of churches. The Portland one seems to be really like
more progressive because Portland.
Right. Because Portland. And I don't think like I hear Jesus's name about as often as I hear like Eckhart Tolle and Rumi and you know, things from the Quran, and you know, it's really inclusive. And
yeah, that sounds like my kind of church. I've never been to church, but like that's where I'd want to go.
It's so good, and it's lovely, and they do all their sermons online. So big plug for Unity of Portland. They're on Facebook, and they do their sermons with technical difficulties and all, and their hearts are just full of exploration. They're lovely. So I started going to this Unity church about a year ago. And so I think it's just been this developing thing. Like before a year ago-ish, I don't know that I would have said that I had a relationship with God. I would have said I have a relationship with the universe or with source or with spirit. And now I'm like, oh, okay, I can include God in that. That's cool. It's just nice to like have access to all the names. So it's really been this developing thing. And the more I have consciously created that, and reached out and said, hey, here's what I want from our relationship, the more I get it. And that's felt just so affirming. And I can see why people like it.
it's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. But there was a big leap. There's a big gap in there. So how did you go from atheist to psychic school?
Okay. I was a hot mess. That's the short answer.
Really the
answer. Right?
Yeah, that's really
the answer. I was a hot mess for a long ass time. Like I just felt, I feel like I rode the struggle bus from like birth to age 35, honestly. Like it was just nonsense a lot of the time. And I'm like, why is this so hard? I remember being a kid and thinking everybody got a manual on how to be a human, except like I missed school that day. And I've totally had that same thought. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I remember being a kid being like, oh, haha, that's funny. And then also being like, but also kind of possible. I don't know how they all know how to do this.
Yeah.
What is going on? Mm-hmm. And just, you know, so I had a lot of, now I just feel so good about it so much of the time that it's hard to talk about it. How, like when the way I felt going through it was like, I was just so unhappy, so depressed. I had clinical depression starting at 8. I was bullied. I felt really, neglected and alone. Like the adults in my life, they didn't have the capacity to support me in the way I was asking to be supported for, you know, whatever reasons. And so I just felt really isolated. Like, that's one of the reasons I was such a big bookworm. I just felt so alone all the time. And that continued through my teenage years. And then there's like all the, you add teen angst to existential, like, you know, a kid who has an existential, I had a crisis, an existential crisis at age 11. I remember sitting in math class and just realized it's like, so, it's just so funny to think about, like, poor little me. I was sitting in math class and I just had this realization of the grandness of the universe and how big and vast it was. And I remember thinking, I am Tsipa. And just the profundity of that, like, broke my brain. And I started, like, just weeping silently in math class. And my teacher, God love him, came over, so sweet. David Bloomquist came over and, like, knelt down and was like, are you okay? And I was just like, like, I don't know whether to nod or shake my head. I'm like, and he's like, you can go to the counselor if you need to, like being so sweet. And I'm just like, I don't know how to explain to well, I don't know what's just happened.
Well, but you also don't have language for it at 8.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like, I was just a kid. So I was just always in my head having these experiences.
I have a similar experience.
Do you?
For the record.
Yeah.
Oh just my God. So not alone.
Tell me.
When I was in fourth grade, we read Tug Everlasting, which is a book about how living forever is actually terrible.
Oh,
and so
gosh.
I was like,
yeah,
oh my
we
God.
Read that too.
Yeah.
Yes. In fourth grade. What is this?
Yes. So everyone in my class either was like bored or like loved this book. And I was like, guys, this book is telling us that heaven is fucked up. Like, and I had like for months would go to sleep at night and was like, what if actually heaven is hell? And what if actually God is the bad guy and we're all being duped? Like, and then I was like, maybe nothing happens, but then like, can you feel the worms eating your body when you die?
Then
like, and it was like, it went on for months never told anyone, which is really weird because like, that's the kind of thing that my mom was really good at. And if I told her, she would have like super rallied, but months I couldn't sleep at night because I was like, what happens when we die? And what if God is actually the devil and we've all completely fucked up and got this wrong?
Go ahead. I think that's signs of like kids who are paying attention.
Yes.
Like, you're paying attention.
So observant.
And you're just like, yeah.
You know what terrifies
like, oh, wait,
me about
the world
that?
Is weird.
Is that like, we don't know what kids are doing that. Right.
Yeah.
Like all these little sensitive souls are out there and they're just like keeping it to, they're like, no, I'm good. Let's play blocks. And then inside they're like, but what if I die now?
Yeah.
Like
I think about that all the time.
Right?
I was as a kid, I didn't tell people lots of things and I'm like, yeah, I don't know. So yeah, I think about that with my nephews. Like, oh my God, I'm always like, tell me, how are you feeling? Like trying to start conversations because I'm like, I don't want to keep that stuff all bottled inside. But sometimes,
I mean,
which I just mostly, when I try to do it with my son, he mostly just gets more avoidant and annoyed.
See, how old
like,
is he?
He's four, and then I have a 1.5-year-old, or he'll be 4 in January.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's, kids are fascinating. My partner has 2 kids, they're 3 and 6, and they're delightful and, you know, insane because they're children. And I was actually just before we got on the call, my boyfriend sent me a picture of them and I was like, oh, they're looking so cute. And then I was like, oh no. Oh God, I love these children. Like, I really love them. Like before I was like, I love them. And now I'm like I almost cried. I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I am just, I'm ruined.
You had your own existential crisis about how much you love these kids.
They're so,
that's a big moment. That's a big old moment right there.
Yeah. I love them. They're just great. And just like seeing the person that they bring out in me when I'm around them, I'm like, okay, we're stepping up the game. Okay. Like you're getting all the best and I'm definitely going to mess it up a lot. And then I will apologize and I will own it. And it just like, it's, I can see how that, you know, and you know, I'm not their parent at this moment, but I am in that parental role to them a lot. And just seeing how much it's requiring me to and like gracing me with this ability to this opportunity to up level is just amazing. It's so fun.
Oh my God, what lucky kids that's like that's such a beautiful way of viewing your role in their life.
Oh, thank you. I don't love all kids. I love all kids. I don't like all kids. Some kids, their parents got to them first. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, let's circle back in 20 years. Like, I'm sure we can work this out in 20 years. But right now, the things your parents are channeling through you is not working for me. But I want to have that like generosity and that love for kids. And so then, you know, whatever you're around a lot, you just like more. So it's like they were like, you know, true. Like these kids, these girls and I, we hit it off right away. Like that's the thing that like drew me and my partner together is that like we met at church and which is also actually a fun story, how I started going to church. But, you know, the girls and I were just playing. Cause I was like, you know what? I'm going to chase these kids. I haven't chased kids in I don't know how long. I'm going to chase them around. And we had this great time. And then it's just, you know, like the more I'm around them, the more I'm just like, you're magic and you're perfect. And how do I live up to this?
So beautiful. It's interesting to me because I think loving kids is one thing, or loving your own kids is one thing. And then having that kind of deep love for other, you know, kids that are not maybe like what biologically yours mm-hmm. is like another, it's like, it's another level. It's like, in some ways I'm like, it's not next level. That's not the word I'm looking for.
It's just a different experience.
Yeah. But yeah. I also think it's like, there's something really beautiful about that.
Thanks.
To have that love.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because I think part of it has to do with this idea of choice, right? Like, so you have this moment of like, oh my God, I love these kids so much that there's this like overwhelming vulnerability in that, right? Of like loving these tiny humans and you recognize how responsible you are just by like being an adult in their lives, mm-hmm. right? And like you recognize how vulnerable you are. And there's a lot of people who touch that nerve and then are like, nope, I'm mm-hmm. out.
Yeah, which I
and they might be out. They might physically stay present, but emotionally be out, right? But what is so beautiful, what I hear you saying is that you're like, oh, this is scary and real. Okay, in we go.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, thank mm-hmm. you. And I feel really appreciative that that I am at this point to be there in their lives, because if I had been there, like if I had had children in that role in my life 10 years ago, I don't know that I could have risen to the occasion the same way. I don't know. I think I have no way of knowing, but mm-hmm. I've always wanted to, like, I've actually thought a lot about this ever since I was, I think probably a young teen, like just thought about like how amazing it would be to like have an adopted child or a foster child or a stepchild and be like, I'm not your mom, but I'm your mom now. And there's nothing you can do to change that. Like you can hate me every day for the rest of your life. And I love you. And like, just that, like you say, the vulnerability, I'm like, I want that. Like, I really want that. And I think that that's, oh man, I lost it. It just feels like this pulling something bigger out of myself. Right. Which is, so it's like, not even like, I don't want it to sound like this, like selfless thing. Like I'm like trying, like, I am just so filled with purity and love. It's like, no, it actually, it's good for me. Like the thing it does for me is the mm-hmm. thing I want. Like I want to be the person I become when I decide I'm all 100% in on the unconditional love.
Yeah.
Even when I'm just like frustrated and exhausted and, you know.
But I feel like that's when you know you're ready. And it's like, when it's for you, because it's not. It's for you.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's next level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Go ahead, Eva.
Well, I wanted to like close the loop. I hate unclosed loops. So going back to you being a hot mess.
Yeah. Right.
And then,
thank you.
And then getting into psychic school. I want to know like,
it's really just been a lot of searching. I feel like the biggest commitment of my life thus far has been, without a doubt, has been my commitment to becoming a better version of myself, becoming a version of myself that I'm really happy being. Because for so long, I was so unhappy being me. I hated myself for such a long time. And there was also this part of me that was like, but also you're amazing and I love you. And so there was this like competing thing where I'm like, can we, like, I just wanted to get everybody on board. Like, let's all get on the same page and just decide I'm perfect, whole and complete as I am. And so just really, really looking for how to do that through all of the like misery and the, like, I don't know if you guys are okay with talking about like kind of triggery subjects.
Trigger warning.
Okay. Yeah. So I went through several periods. Like I had very serious depression, like I said, from age 8, probably to like most of the time until I was in my mid-30s. And I was suicidal several times. I did self-harm in high school. I like played with eating disorders. You know, I was just like, I had OCD really badly in high school. And that was just so frustrating because, you know, when you have OCD, and I don't know, like, I don't know if, you know, anybody else, you guys or anybody else listening has experience with it, but when your brain is giving you these urges, that you have to, it's a compulsion. You have to follow the urge. And you're like, and it's a lot illogical and it's driving me insane. Mm. It is such a hard place to be in. And so going through this process of like being diagnosed with multiple, you know, multiple problems. I think I was diagnosed as bipolar. I was diagnosed as, I think somebody said you have oppositional defiant disorder. And I said, no, I don't. you know, just like getting diagnoses and like, oh, okay, ADHD. Okay. Maybe that's it. And like always looking for like, what's the thing? What's the thing that once I get it and I fix it, then I'm fixed and I'm fine and I can go have a real life. And so it's been this process. It's just like lengthy process of devotion to creating a masterpiece out of myself, creating a masterpiece out of my life. And it started off with just me just feeling like, what's wrong with me? I always knew I was smart. I always knew I was talented. And I just felt like so broken. And again, even as a small child, feeling like, what the fuck? Like, why does this all not match? And so this process of looking to see what would make everything kind of make sense to me and feel like it matched, feel like I'm okay. This is the body I'm in. This is the person I've decided to incarnate as. And I love it. I'm in, like, I dig it so hard. And so that's really just been the process for me of feeling like just one avenue after another, after another, after another, after another. And, you know, so like going through this process of getting these diagnoses and then being like, okay, how do I accept that I'm somebody who has whatever these diagnoses are? And then working past that and being like, oh, okay, maybe like those don't define me. And then the next step of being like, actually, maybe I don't have those things. Maybe those are just labels that aren't true about me or were true in the past or something. And I think that like, that's when it's been a really big piece of the really helpful piece of saying like, okay, a label is adaptive for a short time. And then I move past it. How do I grow through that and grow past it? You know, doing a lot of stuff with psychology, a lot of personal development, self-help, a lot of therapy, taking whatever I could find that I thought might have, you know, I think I stopped searching for the answer and just started looking for answers. Like this isn't going to be the be all end all, but there is a thing that's going to help me with the next step. And just doing that over and over and over and over again. And so I think it was really born out of misery for
suffering.
Yeah. Born out of suffering. Just like they tell you in all the religious texts, it's like, it's born out of suffering. And then the searching, you know, just gradually became like a fixed thing, went from being like looking for a fixed thing outside of myself to looking for a fixed thing within myself to looking for, you know, just like, it's actually in the looking. It's not the finding, it's the looking that's good for me.
Yes. Right? To me, I interpret that as it's the journey itself. Yeah. The journey of finding peace, I think in itself is rewarding because you're not waiting necessarily to the end point, but it's like, oh, this is meaningful to me and I'm having fun now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I'm at now. And it feels so good because I'm not like, oh, I need to fix this thing where I'm angry. I'm like, oh no, I'm angry. Because anger is being like, I'm a human and I have eyeballs. Like I know what happens in the world. I get pissed off about it and it's fine. Yeah. Like I don't, you know, it doesn't mean I dwell in anger or operate from anger or like take my anger out on people, you know, as much as I can help. Like, I think we all have slip ups, but allowing that just being an unreasonable bitch sometimes is like, that's just part of being a human. And I'm going to have those days. Being lazy, yep, I'm going to have those days. Today, I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be super productive. By which I mean, I'm going to decide that the most pleasurable thing is actually the most valuable possible thing I can do. And I watched 2 episodes of The Crown and I had some peanut butter toast and it was amazing. Oh, and I was like, it was so good. And I'm like, I'm creating so much value in the world right now because of my pleasure. I just decided to like try it out and I think I'm right.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm writing that down for our quotable.
Yes. Yes. Because I think sometimes I tell myself when I give myself pleasure, when I give myself a chance to rest, then I have a greater capacity to be of service. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm pausing on the value I'm contributing because I'm going to fill up my own cup and then I can go back to giving to other people.
Right.
But what you're saying is like, no, there's like an incredible amount of value that is created from
the pleasure itself. Yeah.
Eating peanut butter toast and watching The Crown.
Yeah. Right. Like that's actually, what if that's actually the most valuable part?
Yeah. Not like it's just a means to an end so that you can go out there and hustle some more.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like, could you fill up so you could be productive and useful to the rest of us? Like, that's not, because that doesn't feel good. But when, and one of my coaching colleagues, Courtney Adams, she's awesome, put it, kind of like sparked this idea. And the way she talked about it was that she was saying, what if the value, so I'm a coach, right? So she's saying, what if the value happens in the pauses? And it was like, of course it does. Yes. And that, you know, because like I coach my client and then I don't talk to them for a week and then I coach them again. So during the coaching session, they can make tremendous transformation. And then the pause in between is where they actually live it. Right. Mm. That's where the value happens. So what if me just holding that space and deciding the value is in the space, what if that is the most valuable possible thing that I can be, the most valuable person I can be to the world? And like, also when I feel good, cause I'm not pushing myself and I'm like, you know, I'm like, I'm topped up on toast and you know, Netflix, like I'm so much nicer to be around.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking even of like, within a coaching session, like when everyone's silent, that's usually like the most poignant part of the hour, 90 minutes or however long someone's session is, right? Like that pause of like, oh, one of us did said something that really hit home.
Right.
That's the best part of the whole thing, right? Yeah.
Can I add another sort of, another, what's analogy, I suppose? What this is reminding me of is something that they say in meditation a lot, which is like noticing the pauses. Like you're supposed to notice the space in between things, like the space in between your breath, the space in between your thoughts. And I have noticed that when I am, there's like that space is so full of life. It's like, well, it's all in that space. And it's, I don't know. I just found like, there's so many different analogies you can use here where that pause is the most valuable thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And somebody else said music is what happens between the notes. Oh, like, shut up. Of course. That's so good. And it is, it's like that, like Kylie, like you were saying the, on a coaching call when you're, you know, you have that space. As I learn to not talk so much, because I love talking, I have all these great ideas. I'm like,
I relate. Yes.
As I learn more and more to hold powerful space and just like look for and listen for the little thing that's happening. And I'm like, hey, here's a question about that little thing. And then I just let it go. And then they do whatever they're going to do with it. There can be so much transformation and they're just the, cause if you think about how it works energetically, I ask a question and I'm like sucking idea out of you. And I have to like, I have to ask the question and then pull back. So there's a void, like a vacuum pulling the idea out of you. And where do our ideas come from? They come from spirit. So if I ask a great question and then just shut up, I'm like pulling spirit. I'm helping you remember how to prime the pump of pulling spirit out of the ether and in through you. And then it comes right out of your mouth and you're like, fucking God, I'm genius. Oh my God, I'm so brilliant. Right. And that's the whole point of coaching is I want you to know that you're a genius. Mm. Right.
What kind of coach, can you say more about the kind of coaching that you do?
Yeah. So I coach coaches. I coach them on mind drama. Just realized that I am like having been the world's most dramatic person for a very long time. I am absolutely the world's foremost expert on mind drama. I can say that with great confidence. Like I am so good at spotting drama.
We coach on what we know.
Yeah. And I was coaching people on weight loss and overeating, which was fun, but it's not the most, like, it's a tiny part of my story. Like I did overeat emotionally for a long time. But that wasn't like the crux of what was like, that's not my part to change in the world. Like there are amazing coaches who coach on weight and weight loss and overeating. And like, I'm so glad they're there because that is a really compelling part of their story. For me, that wasn't it. And so I was struggling for a long time. Like it's not this, but what is it? Mm. And what it is just mind drama. It's just being any kind of drama. And what I define drama as, I was thinking about what's a useful way to think about this? One way to think of it is that drama is any belief, thought, feeling, or action that's between you and what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Fun. So it's like, it's drama is never something that happens outside of you. You cannot have a circumstance, a factual thing that is drama. it's always just a neutral thing. And the drama happens in your head. And so if you just, if you learn how to not have drama in your head about things, then you're always just,
then there's no drama in your life.
There's no drama in your life. When you stop engaging in drama.
You are singing a love song to Eva.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm right here with you. Girl.
Yeah. And it's like, just real, like just knowing that alone is like so relaxing. Oh my God. Like, because then it's like anything that you perceive as between you and your goal, when you stop perceiving it as being between you and your goal, then you have your goal already. Yeah. Like you can think of time. You're like, oh, well, it's just a matter of time. Well, if you think of time as being between you and what you want, then it is. But if you like, we can bend time with our mind and with our words, like this, like speaking is spell casting, right? That's why we call, when we write out a word, that's why we call it spelling. It's because it's spell casting. So when we stop casting the spell of there's time between me and what I want, then there isn't. And you get to be in the joy of it right now. And that's what actually, again, creates that void that just like sucks it into your life. And it's such a place, fun place to have stuff. Like stuff in your life physically is so much fun.
Yeah. But I just love this so much. I think you're explaining it so well, because I think there's this, I mean, Kylie, you posted this on your Instagram, and this is a quote that I think it's probably on my wall back there, but this idea of like, we don't see things as they are. We see them as we are. And that is just the truth of our reality. Oh. We see the world. You can only see the world from your two eyes and the perspective and the life that you've had. Right. So like, and I think there's something so powerful about understanding that your circumstances actually, well, this is tricky because I think it can be misinterpreted, but I think circumstances are generally neutral. And then it's what we make them mean that causes all the suffering.
100%. I mean, that is what, you know, in Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, like that's what he's talking about. And he was in a concentration camp. Like we don't have to say, like, I think I'm guessing, I'm just going to go with my hunch. I'm wondering if when you're saying like, I don't want to misstate it or like overstate it, it can feel like we're victim blaming or minimizing people's actual trauma.
Yeah, which totally. Of course, or not acknowledging real, like
systemic racism or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is real. Like racism is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And how do we want to think about it? Because it can be such a mind fuck to like, when you have taken on, like, I can't speak. I'm a white woman for anybody who can't. Is, you know, y'all can't see me, but I'm white. I'm real white. But like, so I can speak from it. Like I've done a lot of work on whiteness, on like how, like what it means that I am white. But so it's probably more appropriate for me to speak of it as a woman, you know, in a society that devalues femininity, you know, regularly and repeatedly and deliberately and casually, how it's so easy to take on those systemic ideas and then be pissed at yourself for it. And so like be struggling against it. And then like as you're working through them, being mad at yourself for not being in a different spot. And like, why do I have these ideas? Like, why do I have this sexist idea? Or why do I have this like diminished idea of what my capacity is? And it's like, okay, just settle down though. Like I was just saying to a coach friend today, women have only been able to have credit cards in the United States since like 1974 or something. It's an insanely short time ago. Like women, so historically, if we look throughout history, the only women who regularly could have their own wealth, could inherit and could leave wealth to other people, could conduct their own business, were courtesans. That's it.
Courtesans.
So a courtesan is like, it was like this special class of women in Europe. It's courtesans have appeared in, I think, most cultures throughout history. The most knowledge I have is the ones in Europe, but it was a special class of women who they were prostitutes, essentially. They were sex workers and they were not owned by any man. They had autonomy. They were the only women in society who had autonomy. So, and the reason it worked is because they had, like, they were the ones that men went to for sex, yes, and also entertainment. They were educated and fascinating and talented, and they had artistic skills and storytelling skills. I'm trying to remember the name. There's this fabulous movie. Dangerous Beauty, I think it's called. It's excellent. It's about a real life courtesan. And they were these brilliantly educated women. And they.
Oh, good. I need something new to watch.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. It's so good. You're going to watch it like 9 times and then you're going to.
Wait, Dangerous what?
Dangerous Beauty.
Got it. Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. And if I'm wrong, I will tell you later. But these women who had developed themselves, they were like these powerhouses and they were autonomous. And so the men who came to them for sex and entertainment and intellectual like consultations. They were like consultants, you know, they would consult heads of state and the Pope and like who were like seeing them also as a mistress. And so they were outside of the normal stratification of women, which was solely based on their relationship to men. But these women, although it sort of sounds at first like they were most defined by their relationship to men, were actually least defined by their relationship to men because they could hold property. They could have money. They could leave money to other people. They could inherit wealth. They could, wow. You know, travel freely without a chaperone. They could do whatever they want because they had set up this, you know, they developed this class outside of the class system for themselves. But historically, like, I think one of the interesting things that to go back to my original point, you guys are so fun to talk to. I'm just going everywhere. This is great.
Yeah. I am so like, my grad degree is in gender studies. So I'm like, please tell me more about this. I feel like I'm getting like a lecture on European sex worker history.
Yeah. Oh my
God.
I'm
just like so here good. For this.
There's some story time actually. Books.
Oh, good. This is so fun. Yeah. So yeah. If we look at historically, the way the systemic sexism has appeared, it's been like what has happened is that women have not been able to have businesses, hold wealth, inherit wealth, you know, leave wealth to anybody else. And like, that sounds like maybe a minor detail, but that is your legacy. Like who you want to leave your wealth to is your legacy. And if you can't even hold it or give it to who you want to give it to, then when you die, you're dead. And that fucking sucks. You know, women were not able to go get educated. So the amount of power that women have now is just astonishing. And yes, there are so many women around the world who are not currently free, who do not currently have this level of privilege and opportunity. And it's up to the rest of us who do to just like fucking exploit the shit out of it all the time, as much as we can, and be loud and obnoxious and bossy and rich as fuck, and go do all the things we want to do so that we can like just expand that energetic freedom, invite other people into it. And then at the same time, like, how do we give ourselves grace for not, you know, for when we're like, why am I small? Why am I being small today? Why am I, you know, pretending that's not who I am, right? And then yeah. If we look at the example that's been set for us historically, you know, and I suspect it's true in the courtesan traditions in other cultures, but if we just look at this one, like what is the example being set for us by the women who were the most free, were the most free everywhere. They're like, nobody owns me. I'm gonna have kids. You're not the dad. Probably, I don't care. Like you're just, you know, you don't have rights over these children. These are my children, or I decide who the dad is. I decide who shares power with me. I decide what I'm doing with my money. And then they would have, you know, houses where they would have other courtesans, and you know, is this really liberated thing? And then, so how do we look to that model and just steal whatever we like and bring it into right now? You know, just take what you want. And I think, I don't know where I started, but that's where I got to.
I love that so much. I think that there was a thread that we lost a little bit along that wonderful historical journey which was about like reminding ourselves that like a lot of our progress is actually very recent.
Yeah.
And having grace with the fact that like, oh, do you feel like a fuck up around money? Well, like maybe some of that is because like, your grandmother couldn't have a checking account.
Right. Or, maybe that's because we only had the right to vote for 100 years if you're white in America and a woman. Like, you know, and then like, if you're not a white woman, like if you're a woman in America and you're not white, it's been even less time than that, you know, like giving ourselves grace around the, as Eva was saying, the, you know, the systemic issues that are actually real, that we're not going to like.
Yeah. Meeting yourself where you are.
Right. Yeah. Right. And giving yourself that grace to be like, okay, this is a circumstance. Like this, that's the way we talk about it in my coaching tradition. Like a circumstance is a fact, is a neutral fact. And then sometimes what you put into the circumstance line is debatable, but in your brain, it's real. So it's like,
wait, say more about that.
So like, okay, so you could take racism. like this was actually a thing, you know, that I think came up for a lot of people this year with the Black Lives Matter movement taking, you know, gaining so much steam and like people really taking it seriously on a scale we haven't seen before. Pardon me, white people taking it seriously on a scale we haven't seen before. Wow, Important distinction. But I think the idea of racism is like, for a lot of people, it feels debatable. And they're like, well, like, is it really a thing? And, you know, we're post-racial because we had a Black president, and like, there are a lot of white people and probably some people, you know, Black or people of color or Indigenous people who have, you know, some forms of internalized thing where maybe they question that too. But I think by and large, it's been white people really debating about like, is racism a thing? Like, I don't think it is. And like, what about me? I grew up poor, so I'm not privileged.
But racism is not true, right?
Yeah. Right. And it's like, yeah, okay, like, how is that useful though? Like, I understand. And so if you're, you know, we can get into the definition of racism and like the effects of it and stuff, but I don't think it's as useful as just deciding like, okay, racism's real. We know that. Like, I'm going to go ahead and just say that like, maybe I don't know as well as people of color that racism is real. So I'm just going to take their word for it. Racism is real, not going to debate it. And then how are we going to choose to think about it? How do we want to think about it in a way that brings us to where we want to be? Which I think ironically, a lot of people, not all people, as we're seeing just, you know, very recently post-election, but I think a lot of people want to believe that racism is not real. Because they want racism to not be real. They want to believe we're in a pure meritocracy, right? And so if we all have the same goal, we all have the same intention, how do we think about where we are right now? And I think that, you know, yes, we want to do the work on our thinking and our belief systems and how we interact with these subjects and like just letting ourselves have the relief of saying, okay, racism is 100% real. What do I want to do about it? Mm-hmm. Just as an example.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm just lost in thought in our
be in the space
current American be in hellscape. The space, Kylie. I mean, I
do you want to talk about I that?
Had, yeah,
our current American let's, hellscape. Let's go there.
Yeah, yeah. We. If you give the stomach for it, Eva.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will be a great space to talk about it. I think this is the space that I want to talk about it of all spaces.
Yeah, yeah. So for listeners in this current moment, right, because we don't always release these in the week, although maybe we will now since we're being very topical. Yeah.
Currently it's November 16th. So we are like, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, almost exactly 2 weeks.
Yeah. And the big baby president continues to throw his temper tantrum.
Right. He still and hasn't actually said that he's still trying to hold his ground. He
accidentally tweeted that Joe Biden won.
I know,
saying that he cheated, and then he's been like madly tweeting since then. Like, I mean, he didn't win because he cheated. Yeah. He didn't win.
He like accidentally conceded and has been trying to like walk himself out backwards.
Oh my god!
And none of the adults, quote unquote, adults in the room.
Oh, they're so taking
any responsibility adults. For his temper tantrum.
There was a million MAGA march this weekend. Did you guys hear about this? And there were actually like a lot of people. I don't know if there are actually millions of people, but I mean, again, this is something that I only briefly saw on social media, but like thousands and thousands and thousands of people out there marching for the fact that this is all, you know, voter fraud and blah, blah, right. blah, blah.
Okay. So here's what I'm going to say is really, really awesome about this.
Okay.
Okay. So I knew someone who had skin cancer on her legs and you couldn't tell, you looked at her legs and they look fine. Right. And what the first step in treatment was, is she had to put this cream on and then it brought up. So I didn't actually see any pictures of this part, but like what it apparently did was it brought up all of these like purpley ulcery lesions to the surface of her legs. And when that happened, then they could treat them. Mm-hmm. And that's the state we're in. We're in the part where like, we're bringing up all of these ulcers. We're like, okay, there is cancer here. There is a very serious disease that we do not want to have. So let's bring up all of the evidence of it so we can see what we're dealing with, right? You can't treat an illness that you don't see the ramifications of.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's really, really great.
I think that's I just think that's like a wonderful, like I could use some good news around politics. So I'm like really appreciating that perspective. My concern is that, I don't know. I'm like day away from my period, so I'm probably just like grumpy as fuck. I'm not the best.
I'm being real. You don't have to. You don't have to be the most optimistic person. Right, yeah,
exactly. I'm just like, are we treating the problem or are we making it worse? Because like, it's just, two sides clashing. Are we having like the conversations that need to be having? Like, what's happening? I don't know.
Yeah. I
don't know
what's happening. I mean, and I think to a certain extent, we are not going to know. I think a lot of it is just that we have to decide. And I'll just say that as a white woman, I think a lot of it is on us. I think a lot of it's on white people. And I think particularly
this is really cynical, but I also think like a lot of the older generation, they're just going to like die. So maybe in 20 years, the youth are just going to step up because they're already fucking awesome. And
yeah. And I don't like, if I'm honest, I don't think it's cynical to say that people are going to die. Like if there's one thing we know, it's that people are going to die.
I'm not wishing death upon anyone. No. I do think like, we know that like the Conservative Party is generally also quite like, you know, proportionally very old and white. Mm-hmm. So things will naturally, I think, are moving in a progressive trend.
Right. I think that's definitely true. But then we also, like, we have to, I think that's like a really good thing to remember. And I think that I tend to be an overreactor. Like if I start to get a cold, I'm like, oh, fuck this shit. I'm getting the chicken soup that I made myself. I've got the, you know, I'm going to do like vitamin C 3 times a day. I'm doing that. Like I do all the things at the first sign of the cold. Because I know that when it gets like 3 days in, that's the least effective time for me to do anything. So I think that it's good for us to remember that, yeah, there's like definitely progress on the horizon and young people can be Nazis too. So like, let's just overreact and do everything that we possibly can. And again, I think the burden is for sure. I don't want to say the burden is on white people. I think that as a white woman, I have a unique privilege of being able to address this because I have both the privilege of being white and the disadvantage of being female. And I think that means I have this huge blessing of being able to understand parts of each side. And so how do I relinquish privilege and claim it? Like, how does that look? And it's not like, it's like the breathing thing. It's not this one thing where like, okay, well, that's it. And now it's done and dusted. Great. It's this constant evolving. You know, I don't understand race and my place in a racially biased society the same way I did 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And I don't understand it like I will in 5 or 10 years. Mm. And I'm not gonna, like, I can't even say that one is better and one is worse. There's just a very different understanding. And so,
that's really beautiful. I think that's a wonderful perspective to have as well.
Thank you.
So healthy, like, thank you. Resilient.
Well, and I think that that's actually that, you know, now that I think about it, that's probably one of the biggest places that brought me into spirituality too, is going through this very dark night of the soul, finding out that I was white. Essentially. Like, wait, if I may put it that way.
Say more about that, please.
So I took a class in college about, what was it? It was Women of Color in the US. There was like a much longer title. It was one of those classes where like the title's like a book. And it was fantastic. And the professor was amazing. And just, Roberta something. She was just amazing. Her space holding ability was just mind blowing. I went into this class and I'm like, listen, I get it. I totally get what it's like to be discriminated against by based on race. Like, I'm on your side. I get it. So let me tell you guys what I think. And she was like, I am so grateful for this woman because she was like, thank you. This class is not about you. So you get to comment. I think she gave me a quote. She gave me like a limit. It was like, I could like say something once a week and I could like ask questions, but I could only share my opinion like once a week or something. It was like a limit. So mostly I sat in this class and for 9 weeks, I just wept. I just wept every day in class, grappling with just sitting there and listening and not getting to be right and not getting to be like, you know, an exception.
Take the edge off by saying like, see, I'm a good ally.
Right. I didn't get to be a good white person. She's like,
have to sit with it.
Yeah. You just get to sit and listen and take it in. And it was horrible. It was excruciating. And it was like one of those things where I came out the other side so much happier with who I was because I had learned the ability, if you can believe it, with all the talking, I learned the ability to shut up and just not. So I'm like, now it feels like a superpower where I can be like, when people who are not white tell me what it's like to not be white, I just listen. I just shut my little mouth. I just don't even talk at all. It's amazing. And I'm like,
but amazing. And also quite challenging for some people.
Oh my God. It's so hard. It's terrible. Like, I love being right. Being right is one of my favorite things. Like, I love it. Yeah. But the, like, learning that skill was really, really painful. And one of the, like, hands down, one of the top five experiences of my life that this brilliant professor gave to me, this, you know, this ability to just be wrong.
And sit with that.
And sit with it. Be like, I'm privileged. I didn't even mean to, but I have benefited so much from all of these advantages that were built on the backs of people that, you know, like if you think about it, my ancestors literally committed atrocities in my name. They were like, I want better for my kids, who wanted better for their kids. Right. And to them, that meant stepping on people. Whether or not, like, I can look to my lineage, my literal ancestry, and say, okay, well, actually, you know, like, I have ancestors who came over from Sweden fairly recently, and I have ancestors who lived in the South and then went up to the North to fight in the North, the Northern Army in the Civil War. And so I can look at that and be like, oh, but I'm one of the good ones. But it's like, it doesn't really matter because I'm white, and I get all the benefits of, like, I have the same amount of white privilege as the most Confederate flag waving person on this planet. Like, the biggest Nazi on this planet, and I have the same amount of white privilege.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Right? Let that fuck you up. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I just, it was just such a gift. It was just such a gift to get that perspective, and that it was a visceral skill. It was like a learned skill. So I guess if anybody out there is, like, in the middle of that journey, it's so worth it. It's so good. Like, get in there. Like, I'm going to do it more. Like, I like doing it more and being like, ooh, where else am I a dick? Find out. Let's go there.
Yes.
Well, because you've been through it once and then you survived it.
Yeah. And you see what you, it's like going to bed at the end of a day where you, like, worked your ass off. You're like, you know, like the end of a day where you, like, let's say, like, you finished moving and you got all the stuff put away, and, like, your house is starting to look like somebody lives there, and you go to bed and you feel like you're just exhausted and sore, and you're just like, I'm an animal. I'm so proud of myself. I'm so happy for this person that I am becoming.
I think I can relate very much to what you're saying, but I think we're a special breed. We like type 2 fun, or is it type two, what's it called? There's this thing about how there's people who like regular fun, which is like going to Disneyland and like watching a movie. And then there's a second group, which is like me, and I think maybe you, where it's like, oh yeah, let's go run a marathon. And let's go, like, really go through it. And you're like, oh my God, that's so much fun. And everyone else is like, you're bananas.
Yeah, but they're like,
My very first workshop that I ever put together was at my yoga studio, and I named it, what did I call it? I called it Releasing Shame. And it turns out nobody wants to do that on a Wednesday night.
I was like, Brené Brown says, people ask her what she does on an airplane. If she doesn't want to talk to them, she says, I study shame.
Yep. And then it shuts out.
Catnip, right? I'm like, tell me more.
I know.
So we're type, I don't know if it's type 2 or type B fun or whatever.
I think it's type Leslie Knope. Like, that's you know, it's like, I don't know if you guys like watch Parks and Rec. I've watched it a bunch of times and I love it. But it's like, you know, she like does all that stuff to, what does she do? She's like getting one up on Councilman Jam so she can build her dog park. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yay, let's celebrate. And she's like, awesome, let's get to work. And they're like, don't you ever like celebrate? And she's like, I just said, let's get to work.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
And on the other hand, I will just also remind everybody that I did eat a lot of toast with peanut butter and watch The Crown for 2 hours today on a Monday afternoon. So, like, you have to include the laziness in the work. It's what makes it good.
Did you have any other thoughts, Kylie, on the state of the world? I felt like you were going to say something.
Oh yeah. Later. Tell us.
Yeah. It's a partially formed thought. So maybe it will form itself.
Pull it together with you.
But I kind of keep thinking about like addiction. Mm. And I kind of keep thinking about how, like, sometimes what you have to do is like like just the importance of boundaries, I guess, right? And of like when someone is addicted, there's a point in which you have to like just not be available for their bullshit, right? And you can still like hold them, like you can, the goal is like to see their humanity and also just be like, I'm not available for you, or ask me for money again. I'm not available for you, like fill in the blank. And so I feel like for those of us who, you know, want America to not be a terrible racist hellscape, it's like this duality of fully be like being completely unavailable for people's racist bullshit and like seeing their humanity and loving them. I don't know that I know how to do that, but I think that's the assignment.
I'm going to challenge you.
Okay.
You have a 4-year-old. You definitely know how to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, wait, Kyle, you summed it up. We talked about this a little bit last week, and the quote of the week I thought was like, love is unconditional and it also has boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think, ooh, I like this. It's like parenting America.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is. And like, not from that patronizing point, but like I love my boyfriend's little girls. And they do not get to punch me in the boob.
Yeah.
Like, that's right. Just not because like I don't love them having fun, just because like those are my boobs and that hurts. And we don't do that.
Yeah.
And like, I understand if like, I totally understand that you really want to. I absolutely get it. And that's a no.
Yeah. I think it's harder. I think what's harder for me to know is like, what does that look like every day, all day? Mm. Right. Like, because even with my own kid, that's hard to figure out. But then what does that look like with like, you know, people continuing to say casual, like if one more person in the coaching world talks about their tribe, like, come on guys, we all fucking know you're not supposed to talk about a tribe, right? Like there's these like this casual racism that just gets thrown around all the time. And anyway, I don't know why that one's, because it's almost Thanksgiving, but also I'm like, that's so easy. Like, that is so easy.
Okay, so
just say group, just say community.
Okay, so like, I think that's really interesting because I went through a long time where I was like, oh no, I'm not going to say the word tribe. And then I was like, actually, there are Celtic tribes and I'm descended from them. And so like, if we're saying that certain words are off limits, I mean, it feels a little bit like that thing where to me, and I'm open to pushback on this, but like, to me, it feels a little bit like that thing where I was like, okay, here's the diagnosis that I have. Like, I have ADHD. And that was really important to me for a while, where I'm like, okay, like everybody, like I have ADHD. Okay. So you can't just talk like that, or you can't do this thing. Or like, you know, people are like, oh, well, you know, just put it on your schedule. And I'm like, I have ADHD. So can you like, fuck you. Like, I can't just follow a schedule. That's really triggering, you know? And then moving past that, being like, oh, actually maybe it's like, maybe everything, like maybe that's okay for them to just be in a different spot. Yeah. Right. You know, so for me, it's like, I kind of wonder, like, I think it's really useful to go through the place where we're like, hey, we don't say gypsy. We don't say tribe. We don't, like, there are words that we're just deciding, like, we don't say those.
Yeah.
And let it not be from like a place where that word is now permanently off limits to all but certain people, but just say, okay, so how do we go through that phase? So that later on we remember that it's literally just a collection of letters, and maybe we don't need to let it have power over anybody. Like, maybe we don't need to let it have power over whether or not we're one of the good white people. And maybe people who are, you know, maybe like indigenous people can hear white people talking about their tribes and they're like, I mean, I don't care what they're doing. I don't, it's fine.
So I guess that's, you know what I mean? I think that's exactly my point though. It's like, from a big picture, I can see, okay, our responsibility is to see people's humanity and then not be available for their bullshit, right? To have boundaries and also see their humanity. But then in the trenches of, you know, people being casually racist, like just knowing how to navigate, knowing exactly how to hold space. And I think actually the parenting metaphor is useful because like, I fucking lose my temper on my kid at least once every single day, right?
Yeah.
Like not the 1.5-year-old yet because she's 1.5, but like, it'll happen. You know, I lose my temper with her, like, you know, once a week. But like, I'm impatient with my kids in a way I don't want to be. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's where it becomes a good metaphor, because it's not like, okay, and now I have arrived at like figuring out how to not be like,
right.
Like, it's just like, actually kind of going back to like meditation. It's like we just have to keep coming back to center and knowing what our center is.
Yeah. Can I share what that makes me think of for me?
Yeah.
For me, what I've noticed, just like I noticed.
What if I said no?
Then I would just stop talking, Kylie.
We invited you on our podcast, so you're
just kidding. Well, then the podcast would be over if you said
and
that.
And scene.
Sorry, carry on.
So what I noticed for myself and what I've noticed more and more, and like the more I realize it, the more it's useful, is when I get triggered by something somebody else does, it's because I'm thinking that thing about me.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
So like, totally. Yeah. If like when I was in that place where I'm like, you can't fucking say tribe, what is wrong with you? Like, it's so racist. What I was really feeling was impatience and judgment and expectation toward myself for perpetuating racism and not being okay with it. And it's not like I want to say it's okay if I'm racist, but also like, I'm a white lady in a white society that is racist. I was raised here. I am going to have some unearthed internal racist tendencies that I have not yet found, and I'm in the process of finding them. Can I love myself anyway? Can I love myself in the finding?
And can I like rise to whatever it is? Like if you're continually annoyed by this thing, like right, a particular kind of like, you know, casual racism of white ladies, can I rise to whatever that's telling me about something internally that I am avoiding dealing with?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Well, I think, I have a question for you. So you were saying, are you like encountering casual racism in your, like regularly in your life?
No, because my bubble is like my husband and my kids.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
but more, I'm thinking more of like, you know, I'm most honestly thinking of like, you know, internet conversations, right? Or like, you know, like an example is like literally someone invited me to like their Facebook page or their like business, and it was called like the Gypsy Soul Collective, and I'm like, no, I'm not gonna like that.
Right. Okay. And it's like, there's so many different perspectives, because like the word gypsy specifically, as I find really interesting, because I'm like, we don't call people gypsies. It's so easy not to do. It's so easy not to use the word. Like it almost never comes up, really. Right.
Right.
And having waited tables in Portland for 3 years in college, there was a very large gypsy population in Portland, and they specifically liked to be called gypsies.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well then do I have to know like which descendants of the Roma people specifically I'm talking with? And like for me, it's a judgment call. Like for me, I'm like, okay, I don't say gypsy unless I know I'm talking, like I know I've just said it like 19 times. I'm so sorry. But it, like, I don't like, that's a word I prefer not to use. You know, like, there's this tea called Gypsy Cold Care. It's amazing. I would like traditional medicinals to stop calling it that. You don't need the word. It's just cold care tea. It's excellent without, right?
Yeah.
And like if there's a whole group of people who with that specific heritage that only like to be, they do not like to be called Roma. I asked them because I was nosy. Right. And they're like, well, you know, so it's like, okay, so then where do we give ourselves grace around that?
And I think that the point you were making earlier is like, if we treat this like a checklist, I feel like for a long time, America subsisted on like, we're not racist. Look, look, you can inspect the whole room. You won't find any racism.
Yes. It's
like, but don't open that closet.
Right. And so, it's this idea, like we can just be done being racist at some point. Like, what if that's not possible?
Yeah. Like, well, the reason I asked that question though, Kylie, about if you're like encountering it, is because I think your original question is like, what do we do? I think the question was like, okay, what's the state of the world and how do we like hold boundaries and also love people unconditionally? And I'm like, I wonder if the opportunity, because I think part of the problem is just like the internet. Again, this is a not formally fully formed thought, but like, I feel like the change is going to happen. The only change that I could ever see happening that's like meaningful, that's not necessarily true, but like, I want to just have a conversation with someone, like a face to face, like if someone that I actually know, like in person, not just some like post that I'm reading online, which is like from I don't even know where the fuck it came from. You know, it was like shared 100 times.
Right.
Like I want to have a conversation with someone and understand them. And like, if they're making casually racist remarks, and I feel like that's something you can actually do. But otherwise I am like, I don't know what to do, because I don't always think stuff that's on the internet is like accurate.
What? Hold on, Eva.
Yeah. And I haven't even watched The Social Dilemma yet. I don't know if you guys have you guys any?
No, I have been.
I'm in the middle of a launch right now, so I'm gonna be like doing all this like internet stuff. And I told Adam we gotta watch this movie like when I'm done. But it's just supposed to be about how it's just causing division.
as someone who's built her business off of Facebook, right? I have a little, I don't want to be reminded of how terrible Facebook is for humanity.
Yeah.
Likewise.
Totally. Yeah. It's a weird tool. Like the internet's a weird tool that allows people to actually create for themselves and be independent and have small businesses, which I think is wonderful for, you know, capitalism or whatever smaller economy, but also it's the devil. So there's that.
I mean, but isn't everything, you know,
when I like, think it's how you use it. And
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's like, we get to think of it however we want. And it is like, I'm a little bit trying to justify. I do not want to watch The Social Dilemma and be like, you can't be on Facebook ever anymore because you're like, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, from what I understand, I don't think it's about the user experience. I think it's like the fact that the way it's designed is that like it's just grouping people in very specific ways. So you know, you're in an echo chamber, mm-hmm. and so you're only seeing what you see.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Again,
I'm doing my part to fight that by accepting any and all friend requests from female presenting people on Facebook. If you're a guy, I delete you. If you're not, and you're like a real human that you're networked in. And that way I'm like constantly getting this influx of people that I do not agree with.
Yeah. You know, my account is just so like obviously progressive. It's just like shouting that from my account. Yeah. So like, I'm pretty sure everyone on there, you know, it is an echo chamber, but I did have someone follow me who was noticeably a Trump supporter, a female, mm-hmm. who was like a friend of a friend. And I was like, at first I was like, oh, I don't know about this. Like, and then I was like, no. Like this is good. This is what I want. I want to cross like whatever, cross streams, as some people say about pain.
Yeah. But
like,
yeah.
So
yeah, I think it's really useful also. Like for me, what I've seen is that it's so useful for me to see myself get triggered in different ways and then decide what I want to do about it. Like decide, do you guys know Denise Duffield Thomas? She runs mm-hmm. Lucky Bitch. Mm-hmm. So she had this great post. She's fabulous. She's in Australia. She wrote a post, like right after the election, I think. And she was like, okay, it's time to draw a line in the sand. My work is not for Trump supporters.
Yeah. So I can forward you the email, Eva. It was great.
It was fantastic. Yeah. And hers was inspired by a woman who wrote an article on Medium that I am forgetting this woman's name, but it was a similar thing. She's like, if you support Trump, you don't get to buy my shit. So that's just it. That's like, that's my line in the sand. And so like, I was like, wow, that's really fascinating. And then like, what's my line in the sand? What do I want it to be? And like watching it change and evolve and develop. And like I had a friend, and a coaching friend that like we were in the same coaching program like 5 years ago, and we weren't ever close. Like we talked a bit and I thought she was very nice and, you know, lost touch. And then her Facebook stories have been coming up and, pardon me. And she's like, apparently gone full crazy pants Trump supporting, where she's like, you know, it's a fraud and Jesus come down with your angels and like strike this down. And this is what's going to happen. And you guys are going to see that this is this massive election fraud. And it's like, and it, I like, I went to go to like block her or, you know, delete her as a friend. I was like, actually, I don't think I need to, but this is fascinating. Like, I don't agree. I don't need to have interactions with her, but like, currently it's not doing any damage to me.
Yeah. I mean, they're not, I don't know. I just like, I don't, again, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. Like,
right.
Yes to that girl.
I'm not gonna lie, I just unfriend the fuck out of anybody who's like, if you support QAnon, if you like, bye, which is not because I think that that's what one has to do, but because it physically makes me so uncomfortable. So I'm just like,
and I think
like,
that's
I don't have to have this in my feet.
That's right, such a valid response.
Like and I think that's like a, like you were saying, a boundary, a protection. Like this isn't good for me. But like, you know, again, I'm talking, I probably have like one Trump supporter follower possibly.
Yeah.
And she seemed like a, you know, she wasn't going to, what do they call that? The troll me or whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
She
was
like, she seemed like a regular, you know, person. And I was like, how am I ever going to, like, I don't know anyone who's a Trump supporter. So like, how am I ever going to fucking have that conversation that I'm trying to have with someone if I don't open myself up to that experience.
Right. Or here's the other thing. Maybe you do, and they don't feel safe talking about it to you because like, fuck Trump.
Exactly.
And like, I spent 2016 being so relentlessly, I was searching out bigots. I was finding Trump supporters. I was finding the sexist and the racist. And I'd like, go find him. And I'd be like, you're doing it wrong. Here's how you're wrong. Fuck you. Fuck your thinking. Fuck all. And I was like, and it didn't help anything. I don't know if you know this. Telling people they're wrong does not change their minds. It's a very interesting thing about humans. So I tried that. I've done all the research on that. Not effective. And like, just even in the last few months, my approach has like changed, and I'm not sure where I'm going to land, but I think I like what I'm noticing is that it's an interesting experiment, you know, keeping it within bounds that like, you know, like you're saying, Kylie, like you decide what are the boundaries for you.
Yeah.
And like, like seeing like, oh wait, maybe I can experiment with a different boundary, because, you know, 2 months ago it would have been like, you know, fuck this chick, block, delete, bye. And I'm like, what right. if I don't? Like, what happens? What do I do?
And I also think it's like what your intention is. If your intention is like, okay, so I don't like, you're going to like take money from someone whose values are completely just disaligned with yours, but you just want them around because you can make money off of them. I think that's kind of like, what I'm saying is, if you're like exploiting someone, that's kind of fucked up. If you're saying like,
right,
I want to like kind of have a conversation with you, that's a different story. I'm not going to be your best friend. We're probably not gonna be best friends, but like,
yeah,
stuff. I want to, that's because again, I'm still focused on this question of like, what do you do? How do you have boundaries? And also how do you have boundaries and have love and make change? Like, how do you actually that's what I'm really curious about.
So I actually have thought about this a lot. May I share with you?
Please.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So where I've gotten to is that when I am willing to own my emotions, allow my feelings, feel my feelings, process them, and just let them be okay, then I get to go back and do the thing that I want to do. So like, there was a while where I was seeing a lot of activists on like my Facebook and Twitter feeds saying, get mad, stay mad. And I'm just like, do not stay mad. That's so bad for you. Like, it's so bad to just like nurse your anger and like be pissed off all the time. If you're continually getting pissed off, I think that it's probably different if you're allowing right? Because like staying mad is like, it's like being in that anger, and just physiologically, that's so bad for your body. It's such a bad state to be in. And of all the people that we want in a healthy physiological state, activists are the ones. You don't need to get mad and then stay mad to make action, like to make really transformative change in the world. I think getting mad is brilliant. And then you allow it to move through your body and you process it by just noticing it and not resisting it and letting it suck. And then you take the action that you were inspired to take by your getting mad. You're like, oh, that pisses me off when somebody does that. Like, when I see this thing in the world, that really pisses me off.
Yeah.
How do I allow it so I give myself that peace and then, you know, go fuck up some Trump rallies, you know, or go, you know, fight for criminal justice reform. Like, how do I, it's just like letting it be that process and giving yourself that peace. And that way you can have a boundary and it's so clean and neutral, right? Just like going back to like the thing about kids, like, you know, like my boyfriend's little girls, like they don't want to go to bed. Like, or they're like, no, I'm not putting on my pajamas. And they're like, they're willing to have a tantrum about it. My feelings aren't hurt.
Right.
Right. Even if they were like, I hate you, which they haven't ever said. Thank goodness. It's early days. I'm sure it'll happen. You know? Or like, so here, maybe a better example. I used to work with teen moms in state custody. And they were all like, they all had been either in foster homes that they'd aged out of or had been kicked out of, or they had been in jail, or they had been a victim of sex trafficking, usually more than one of those things. And so they were, you know, they were already teens, and then they were moms, and then they had all these traumatic experiences in their histories, and they're living in a residential facility. So there's a lot of feelings. And they would regularly tell me that they hated me. And I'm like, okay, that you do not have to like me. I love you. You do not have to like me at all. And actually, if you're not pissed at me, like at least a third of the time, I'm probably not doing my job right. But I'm not taking it personally, right? Like, I'm gonna help you make this change. And so like, even if I'm like hurt at first, or like I'm pissed off at first, I'm like, okay, I can allow myself to have those feelings. And then also, you do have to go to bed. It is bedtime. Or you're not allowed to feed your child Flaming Hot Cheetos. And the reason I can say that is because the state of Oregon told us that that's okay for us to say, right? You know, like we can have this boundary and let it be from this like totally clean, neutral place. And it's just, it's like so much easier.
Right. Not that there's anything wrong with being mad. Not that there's like, if you are mad, like be mad, but don't be mad because someone else is telling you that you need to stay mad in order to stay in the fight. Like, you can do what the fuck you want to do. Like,
right. But, anger is not necessarily the most effective emotion. Yeah.
But usually if you ask yourself, like, do you want to stay mad this whole time? If you could also still effectively go out and fuck up some shit that you need to fuck up, like, chances are your body's going to say, no, I don't really want that.
Right.
I would rather still be productive and still, you know, do what I need to do, but not like burn myself
out. Have pleasure.
Yeah. Was it John Lewis who said, make good trouble?
Never heard that before.
Oh yeah. So I want to say it was John Lewis.
I think so.
Who said, make good trouble. And it's like, you know, we have so many amazing examples in this country of, and across the world, of activists who have dedicated their life to transformative change and having that passion and that fire and being totally chill in their own lives. Right. Yeah. And I think the better we get at that, the more effective we get, because when you're not like, if we look at the other extreme is Trump, who's like, I want it my way. And I'm so pissed that you don't agree. And he's like, flying off.
I want the golden egg and I want it now.
Yes. Yes. Like I'm an American and I want, you know, and just like, he's like that other extreme of attempting to control everything. It can be, it can be effective. And like, you get a choice. Who do you want to be? Do you want to be somebody like, do you want to live as somebody who's really emotionally reactive? And there's nothing wrong with that. I just think it's less enjoyable having done both.
Yeah. Oh, there's like so much juicy stuff in here, like, and lots to think about. And I think, I love these conversations because I think we can all agree, like, we don't know how to do it right. Like, none of us are like being here, like, we know how to do it right. And that's why I think what makes it also like, we're all trying to fucking figure it out right now. I don't think anyone, there's no like one answer. And I think, but these conversations though, and along with all the different perspectives that I'm getting, actually help me. They're very helpful for me anyway, in trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, me too. And it's like, it is that power of like questions.
Yeah.
Like the not knowing, going into the not knowing and being like, I definitely do not think what I just did was right.
Yeah.
What do I want to do next?
Yeah. Like, both the not knowing and the willingness to be wrong.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's at least for us white ladies.
Right. I'm wrong every day.
Yeah.
But it's like, the more I'm willing to be wrong, the faster I grow. My, one of my coaches says, she has this acronym DIE. So DIE, right? Decide, implement, evaluate. And I think the acronym of DIE is so perfect there, because like, the more that you're willing to decide and then implement and then evaluate, the faster you grow. So the more of those little cycles you do, the more growth you get. So the more you're willing to die, the faster you live, like the more you live.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, and again, bringing in Buddhism, it's like, you're supposed to die a million times. You just keep dying over and over again.
So
you're reborn and you're reborn and you're reborn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why, I think why that's like, people who are onto that secret, like you're saying, the type two or whatever.
Fun.
Yeah. Fun. we're like, let's go die somewhere. Like, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because it's so, anyway, it's so rewarding. I'm like, it's so rewarding.
Yeah.
But all right. We should be mindful of time because our listeners probably have other shit to do.
Can't imagine. Yeah.
But if you are here, we so appreciate you.
Oh my gosh, so much. So much. Yeah.
So we do have a final question we'd like to ask. What is something that is bringing you joy right now?
Well, in this very moment, this conversation, just having so much fun. It's so nice to just be able to wax philosophical and wander around ideas and stuff with people who are engaged in, and thank you so much. I'm just thrilled.
Waxing philosophical is our jam.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I thought of earlier was The Crown. As of this recording, The Crown was released, season 4 was released yesterday. There's, you know, many historical inaccuracies, I'm sure. And it's just, I love, I've always been fascinated by the British royal family. I am like I really believe firmly in democratic socialism, and I also adore the British royal family, and I cannot reconcile the two. And I'm just one of those paradoxes. I contain multitudes. It's true. And I think, I went through a long time where I was really obsessed with Kate Middleton, who, for people who don't know, is the Duchess of Cambridge. She's Prince William's wife. And I think the thing that fascinates me about her is the ego transformation that she had to go through, to go from being, you know, growing up a middle-class kid, and then her parents becoming quite wealthy, and then being put into this world. Like when she went to high school, she was in this extremely elite high school, or, you know, the equivalent of high school, and then went to this world-class university and then became Prince William's girlfriend and then dated him for like 9 years before they got married. And now she's going to be the queen. And it's just like the self-concept transformation that it requires to go through that is just fascinating to me.
I've never thought about that once. I don't know shit about any of the royalty or whatever. Like, but that is actually really fascinating. Like talk about, I mean, I'm sure she had to do a lot of personal development and mindset work.
Absolutely. And, you know, and then like seeing how her image has changed as well. I think that that often goes along for us because there's the, how we do something inside and then how are we, like, what are we presenting to the world that kind of verifies, like, I know for me, when I feel like tired or crappy, if I go put on makeup, I actually feel better. If I really need a hit, I like put on red lipstick. And then I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, you obviously you have your shit together. Look at your face. And I think it's just like finding those, like, I think that's part of the self-concept growth is that like, you can do it all internally, but I think that when you make a transformation and you have some sort of effect on the external world, then you get the, that like mirroring back to you that says, yes, you've changed. And I actually think this goes back into gender roles, because one thing they know about little babies is that little boys are faced outward more and little girls are faced inward more. And so little girls develop a sense of relation, like social relation, much earlier. And little boys develop a sense of agency on the external world. And so if we think about the way that shows up later in life, like going back to the money conversation, for example, like how have we been groomed from in utero to expect that our most effective place is either on the world, the physical world that we can see, or on how people feel?
So interesting.
Wow.
Wait, they're facing inward and outward. You mean in the belly?
Oh no, no, no. Like when, sorry, after they're born, when they're infants. Yeah. Like,
but facing
adults will when they hold a baby, they'll face the little girl in them. They'll like be like, oh, hi baby. And they'll talk to her and little, just more often. And little boys are faced outward to look at what's,
That's so interesting.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Oh, when you look at how babies are treated. I mean, look at these gender reveal parties. People are like obsessed with knowing what the fuck is between their baby's legs. Like, why are you so obsessed with your child's genitalia? Can we talk about that? Do you need to talk to a therapist? Because that's a lot. You need to just set California on fire because like everybody needed to know your baby had a cock.
My favorite, I happen to know a gender reveal party photo video that I was privy to watching in my like extended circle. The dad is so visibly disappointed when they discover it's a girl.
Oh God.
And I was like, that's like fucking now that is always there, right? Like you're allowed to have whatever. Like I know tons of people who had like lots of intense feelings. Like my son, when I was pregnant with my son, I was like, well, like he's not going to have horrible trauma. Therefore he's going to be an entitled shithead. Maybe. And then the way that I rationalized that was like, well, maybe my husband will die when he's young. Like all sorts of weird
and
things
that's good.
We do
and
around.
You don't want,
yeah, you
right?
Do not want to capture that.
It's on our podcast. Right. I suppose you can hear this, but like, that's not like recorded for all time. You're in like knee jerk reaction to something that you haven't processed yet. Like,
I think as children, and I mean like as young people, but also as the offspring of other humans, I don't think we need to know everything that goes on in our parents' brains because they are also just people and they're
wrong. Totally. You don't want to know what's everything. No, you do not.
That was the
know.
Biggest realization that I had upon becoming a parent. I actually called my mom at one point early on and was like, oh, I get now. You were just fucking winging it the whole time. Like you had no fucking clue when you were a kid. Like you were like so mad, like why didn't you know, when you like reach this point where you're processing the difficulty of your childhood, you're like, which my kids will do it too, like every kid does it, right? It was like, oh, why didn't you do this better, why didn't you do this better? And I like remember like my kids were like, my son was like a couple months old and I was just like, oh, you are literally just fucking making this up.
Oh my god. Everything. Yeah, I think that like I look at young Sipa and I'm like, you thought everybody else had a handbook. Nobody else had a handbook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I could have, if I could just tell her that, like just nobody, there is no rule book. So nobody knows what they're doing really. And also you kind of get to go do whatever you want.
Yeah. And there's no right or wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I feel like her life would have been so, so her experience would have been so different just of like feeling victimized by people who were clearly, who clearly had it in for her. And I'm like, nobody has it in for you. They're all just a little fucked up.
Yeah.
Right? Just we all
like, everyone's not everyone, but many of us are loving and we're all fucked up.
Yeah. Yes. And like you said, Kylie, like we're all just making it up. My hypnosis teacher says that, you know, I'm like, hey, do you think this would work for helping somebody, you know, get rid of their fear of flying? Do you, like, if this comes up, can I do this and this? And she's like, what do you think I'm going to say? And I'm like, yeah, okay. It's all made up. And I'm like, all right, I'll go try it. I'll go try it on me. Yeah. I'll go try it on some people. We'll see what we work out.
Yeah.
So it is a testament to how delightful this whole dialogue is that our What Is Bringing You Joy turned into like this unraveling of something even more magical, right? I do want to know, Eva, what is bringing you joy right now?
Okay. So I don't want to get ahead of myself. I was going to earlier say coffee shops because I can go to, because you know what? I'm going to tell you my new thing that's bringing me joy that just happened today. And I don't want to get ahead of myself because I could end up hating it, but I want to like preface.
What's coming?
I know. I like really want to know what this is now. Tell me everything.
Well, it's difficult for me to say because I created my first Reels today, which I don't, if you guys don't know what that is, it's like the new, it's like TikTok, but it's on Instagram.
Yeah. The Instagram little, okay.
Yeah. And it's hard for me to say because I was like, oh my God, this is when it came out. I was like, this is so annoying. It's like another Instagram thing that's happening. Like, oh, like more information. And I was like, I'm never going to create one of those. And then I created one today and I was able to express myself with my body. And because usually what I do is I create this content and it takes me a long time to write because I have these big old lofty ideas and I can't like put them down in like these words. And I was like, I just felt really creative. And instead of being like, no, I don't want to do this, I was like, why don't I try something new? I was just like so open to it. And I got on my phone and I created this thing and it was fun. It was fun and so much easier than writing content for me because I like writing context takes me a long time. So for dear listeners, anyone out there who's listening to Instagram, know that I like I'm slaving over my computer, like writing these long ass captions. But this was like me just like moving my body around and like dancing around. And I was like, this is fun. And I was like, I think so much of like business, but I think I'm sure this applies to like everyone's life in some ways. Like you have to like work to your strengths and like do things in a way that are fun to you. And like, I'm like, oh, maybe this is like my strength that I didn't even know I had all along. It's like, I have no problem being in front of video. Like, video is easy for me. And I'm like, anyway, it was just kind of like an aha moment. And I don't know if I'm going to keep doing it, but I was like, it was a reminder that there's always, you can always tweak things. You can always pivot. You can always find a different way to do something that works in flow with you instead of like having to go against the grain. So that's why I had this whole long.
That's amazing. Preface. Okay. What do you know about yourself now? Like what transformation did you have about like your self-concept? I want to know.
Oh, this is such a good question. Look at you in the questions. Okay. What I know about myself. Well, just yesterday, Adam had asked me what I think one of my greatest skills is, hard skills. And I was like, I have a lot of great soft skills. But I was like, I don't know about hard skills. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm a pretty good dancer. Like, I don't know if that's a hard skill, but like, I'm a pretty fucking dancer. You put me on dance floor. I'm confident. I can be sexy. Like you got moves. I have moves like you've never seen before. Right. So I like to dance. And so one takeaway was that like, I'm very comfortable moving my body, which is one thing, which is like a fucking blessing. Cause that's that's not how I always felt. You know what I mean? And I got that from making a fucking social media post. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it felt like a big moment for me. And the other takeaway was that I think I'm expressive in a way that I thought it always had to come through writing. Cause I was an English major. So I was like, and a journalist minor. So I was like, I have to like do all this writing and I love writing, but you guys know, writing can be a fucking pain in the ass sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe I can express myself in a different way. And that's
so cool.
It like opened up something.
Really cool.
Yeah.
I love this.
So we'll see what happens.
But yeah. What I'm kind of hearing, tell me if I'm like reading this right. It sounds like you discovered a way of letting it just be so much easier than you had been.
Yes. Which is actually, Kylie helped me with this. Okay. Sorry. Yes. This is the whole story.
Cause I was thinking about this to you.
So Kylie and I had a little power.
I did notice
yesterday.
It. I was like, of course this happened after we had our session last night. Of course.
So Kylie,
not because I'm amazing, but because the records are amazing.
But also, and I don't know, you also like did some like energy stuff.
Oh, wait,
like,
were you doing Akashic Records?
Yeah, that's my whole, that's my whole thing.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. I love Akashic Records. They're fascinating.
And we just had a call yesterday and her, and the whole theme that I walked away with, like that Kylie helped me sort of like unpack, is like, just do what you want. Just do what you want. And that, like, that's like fun and easy. And I was like, well, I'm feeling creative today. So I'm going to do this thing that my cynical ass like 2 months ago was like, I'm not going to do that because that's stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
I'm thrilled by this.
Yes. Kylie, we're going to throw it to you. What's one thing that's bringing you joy right now?
Okay. So I started to tell you guys this before we hit record and then I paused to tell you the full story, which is just that we are already full knee deep in Christmas at my house. And it's kind of amazing. So, and it's all thanks to my husband, who's like, I think managing his like, you know, quarantine exhaustion by being like, fuck it. How early can we start celebrating Christmas? So my front yard, well, first of all, right now, dear listeners, I am wearing full pajamas of with like reindeer and Christmas trees, including matching socks.
Oh, stop.
Everyone
so good.
In my family, like both little kids and my husband. My husband got matching PJs for all of us.
Oh my God, I love all of this.
And they arrived today. And so after dinner, we put them all on and my kids were like beside themselves with excitement. Like my daughter was like grabbing her like little pot belly and then like looking at all of us being like, we're all matching.
Oh my
And then
gosh.
Nick was like, we're going to do this every year. Like, you're going to love it until you hate it. And then we're going to definitely make you do it. And then you'll love it again.
You're like creating a family tradition.
We're making a family tradition. Oh. And like Nick gets all of the credit behind this. We've been playing Christmas music for like 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, put up Christmas lights on our tree outside and it was like 70 degrees outside weekend, and my neighbors were like cracking up. And then Nick found these like blow up things, like Christmassy things. So ours are a cactus with a hat on top.
Yeah,
I live in New England, SIPA, just for context.
Thank you.
And a unicorn with a Merry Christmas saddle.
Oh my God. Stop it. Okay. I have to request a picture.
Yeah.
I need a picture of the unicorn because I don't know if you know this about small girls, but they are very into unicorns.
My son is also obsessed with unicorns.
Okay. I wasn't sure about what the like the boy girl split was on that. I only have access to two little girls who like unicorns are a big deal. Also, full disclosure, I love unicorns very much.
Unicorns are awesome. We should all love unicorns.
They're amazing.
Yeah. They are. They are. And I sometimes when I'm trying to get my son to go to sleep at night, well, actually every night now our routine is I tell him a bedtime story. But I actually started a while ago opening my records to like channel a bedtime story for him.
Shut up.
Yeah.
That's
at a certain point you run out of ideas. And I'm like,
genius.
Oh wait, I have a superpower.
Oh my God. That's so
and so there's like this character that's Esmeralda, who's the queen, who's a unicorn queen, and she lives in the rainbow forest in a rainbow castle,
obviously.
And so Desi has named our unicorn in the front yard Esmeralda, and last night we were outside and he was talking to Esmeralda and he goes, but I'm talking to the Esmeralda that's in my imagination, the real one. I'm not talking to the one in our yard.
Oh my goodness.
Oh gosh. So
all of that is, and you know what, Christmas is really fun, like the whole like decorations, silly music, blah, blah, blah. And I often feel like it comes so quickly and then I'm like scrambling to like fit all the things I like about Christmas in. So I'm kind of psyched because I'm like, I have like 6 weeks to figure out when I'm going to make Christmas cookies, as opposed to remembering on December 15th, it's about to be Christmas. And then I'm like,
oh my God,
how
that's
do I make
so
Christmas
smart.
Cookies?
Yeah.
It's I feel the same way, but I've never like taken initiative that early. So I think that you've just inspired me and it's now Christmas.
Yeah. No, I can take no credit for this. This is all my brilliant husband, but it's the greatest thing ever.
Listen,
so everyone should,
you
just
can both take credit.
Yeah.
You're telling us you put on the pajamas you told it, like you could have pretended that you were not wearing those delightful pajamas.
It's true.
Oh,
but
that's so good.
All right, Sipa, aside from friending you, which you will accept all friend requests,
right, yes.
Which I love, aside from friending you, how can people find you and work with you and follow all of your genius?
So I'm on Facebook. I have a public, you know, my account is public. So anything I say, everybody can see. And it's Sipa Swan, Sipa. Last name is Swan. And then my website is sipaswan.com. And yeah, I love to meet new people and help people with their mind drama and help them make just shitloads of money and have more fun and have more sex. And like, just whatever the problems are you think you're having, let's just like get them out of the way so you can go do all the fun things.
Yes. Yep.
Awesome.
That's what we all need. All right.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you so much. This really was. I just really appreciate the opportunity to talk and explore and chat and see you guys face to face.
Yeah.
I love your faces.
Okay. Human contact.
Yeah. Yay, oh my God, I love this stuff.
All right. Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.